everybody. You are listening to Limited Playtime, the board game podcast where we bring you board game reviews in 30 minutes or less.
Or the next episode is free.
I am Kyle Bolin.
And I'm Jason Cavallari.
And today we are bringing you your Destinies. The game Destinies. We're bringing you the game Destinies.
All of your Destinies we're bringing.
We're just talking about Destinies. We're not bringing you anything other than an opinion, maybe.
Right, maybe.
Yeah. Destinies is a game designed by, taking my time here because I've already forgotten what all these little symbols mean, Michal Golubiowski, Philippe Mionjski. Nope, that wasn't it. Mionjski?
Okay.
Art by Carolina Jedzerak. Jedzerak. Magdalena Lezinskia. Apologies to all of you individuals who worked on Destinies. I'm at a complete loss for how to pronounce these names. Jason even looked up how we do some of these consonants here, and it's still just a complete complete loss. So we tried, but yes, obviously we're absolutely terrible at this.
We tried to become experts in Polish pronunciation
in like 10 minutes.
Yeah, in 10 minutes.
We failed, but you did not fail at designing Destinies. It is a game that we are going to talk about. And I guess pass judgment on. It is published by Lucky Duck Games, and has a player count of 1 to 3 players. Board Game Geek says best at 2. I kind of wonder about that myself, but we'll get into that later. With a weight of 1.93 out of 5.
Yeah, I'd say that's accurate.
Destinies is, I guess, for better. I don't like the best way I can describe it is it's a bit of an adventure game.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, it's a, explore and do stuff game.
It's, explore, attempt to interact with the things you find on a map that you were kind of, resolving, but...
No, you're, like, sort of discovering as you go, kind of.
Yeah, like, flipping over, like this game, from a glance, like, at the tabletop level, just looking down at it, it looks like Seventh Continent, where you've got a bunch of sort of, like, square cards laid out in, like some sort of pattern, right? And many of them are face down. And when you move your character that you're controlling onto that, you then flip it over and discover what that location is like and several different points of interest on that location for you to interact with.
Yep.
And those interactions may lead to choices or like challenges, discoveries, more points of interest that come up, NPCs to talk to and interact with.
We should say that like most of this is driven by the app.
I was gonna get into that next. You have all the cards on the table, but also everything in the game, pretty much everything in the game, including like the characters, the character models, the NPCs, I think even the items, right? Because you scan them.
It depends on the item, but yeah.
All of it is represented within the app that you run on your tablet or your phone or your PC or whatever, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, like, most of the cards and whatnot in the game come with, like, a QR code on them.
Yeah.
And, at certain points you may need... Like, if, for example, you need to interact with the game using a specific item, you'll have to scan the QR code for that item. So certain story reasons or certain encounters will require you to use specific items, and that's kind of what the scanning is used for. There's also the sort of driving force of the game, the thing that lets you win the game, which is your destiny. So you're at the beginning of the game, your character is assigned a personal destiny, the thing that you have to do to basically win the game.
Your quest,
exactly. And it's kept secret from everybody else that's playing, so you're the only one that knows what it is exactly you're supposed to do. And that card that you have, the destiny card that's given to you, will also have a QR code on it, and at certain intervals in the game on the app, you'll have to scan the destiny card as well to sort of follow the path that you're supposed to go on to complete your mission.
I think one thing that you just kind of like barely touched on that may not be completely explicit at this point and will be a little bit odd for this type of a game is that this is a competitive game.
Oh, yeah.
There are many games out there where, like, I have a quest and you have a quest and I may not know what your quest is and vice versa, but it still might be a co-op or a semi-co-op game, and that's just one little wrinkle they throw in to make it more interesting.
Yeah, Gloomhaven's like that.
Yeah, yeah, Gloomhaven's like that. The Dead of Winter is like that. I guess it can be semi-co-op. I mean, the spaceship game that we play is like that.
The spaceship game, Nemesis.
Yeah. and those games, two of those games are like semi-co-op, so you might have like a traitor in your midst or whatever, like you may have incompatible goals or whatever, but you can still play those games fully co-op and everything. And yeah. And like you mentioned, Gloomhaven has that element and it's fully co-op all the time. This is not that. This is a competitive game where you are racing to complete your destiny before the other players that are playing the game.
Yeah.
Unless you're playing the solo version of the game.
Yeah, exactly.
So let's keep that in mind as we talk about this game, because I feel like that might impact whether or not certain people will enjoy it or not.
Yeah, for sure. You can probably speak more to that because I think you had sort of that... The downside of this setup here.
The downside, I think, is a personal thing. You know, yeah. I think that this is going to come down to a personal preference as to whether or not a cooperative exploration game sounds boring to you, mm-hmm. or that sounds like a fun way to spend an evening with somebody or by yourself. You know,
yeah.
I think that's what it comes down to. And if you're the kind of person that enjoys the idea of an adventure exploration game, but you also want it to be competitive, like if you've got that old, you know, some old Runebound DNA in there that needs, you've got an itch that you need to scratch, you know, that kind of like stems from that sort of a game, mm-hmm. then this might actually work for you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah, so let's talk about some of the mechanics here. So, I mean, aside from the app sort of driving, like, what you discover and where you go and stuff, the main mechanic is, like, a skill check kind of mechanic.
Yep.
There's three different skill tracks on your character sheet. I forget, like, one's intelligence, one's strength, and I forget, the other one's probably agility. And on each of those tracks, you have four, like little wooden discs.
Is it always four or do some of them have three?
As far as I remember,
I thought some of them had
some
three.
Of them might actually have three. I don't know.
Cause it's like, if you're really good at something, you might have more discs, which means that you
That's
might
true.
Get more successes
yeah, yeah,
on that track yeah. or on those types of skill checks.
That's true. So there could be three or four little white discs per skill track, and they go in like separate numbers, so I think they're like 0 to 9 or something, and so you have, like, in the intelligence one, you have a disc on 2, a disc on 5, a disc on 7 and 8, let's say. So when you roll a skill check, you have two dice that you roll every time you do skill check, and then you can additionally add in what are called effort dice. The only difference between them and the regular dice is that once you use them, they're sort of expended, and you can only get them back one at a time. So at the beginning of each turn, you get one expended effort dice back. So you roll all the dice that you're going to throw in this particular check. You add up how many points you've rolled.
How much you've rolled. You compare the score against all the discs on the track, right?
Yeah, so and say then... in the example I just gave where you had discs on, like, 2, 5, 7, and 8, if you rolled 9, amongst all your dice, then you just got 4 successes because
right.
you had 4 discs that
it's,
are below
It's the
nine.
Number of discs that are below the score you rolled.
Yeah,
the total number that you rolled, yeah.
Yeah. And then you would enter, you know, so I got 4 successes, and then I enter that into the app, and the app tells me if that was enough to overcome
whatever
challenge.
You're a good
boy. Yeah, exactly. Here's your treat.
Yes.
that's sort of like the main mechanic, and there are other things you could do. Like, there's experience points that you can use to sort of adjust the discs up or down.
Yep.
You get items that can, you know, change certain things about your character.
Sure, they can,
you can buy stuff.
Yeah. Some of the items will interact with things in the game, like the points of interest that you find. I think there was, like, points where we could, like, basically trade or buy or sell or something like that at a couple little
yeah.
points.
Yeah, there's often, like, a shop or something.
Yeah, yeah. And it might be, you might have items that allow you to just, like, you know, pass certain checks or have, like, you know, like a massive bonus on a certain check or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them might be items that you don't even realize at the beginning are story relevant to your destiny. You might expend it on a check early in the game and then realize that you could have used it to further your progress on your actual destiny further on in the game when you find something significant to your destiny. So, you know, like, the game, like, the main loop of the game, I think, is, like, the exploration coupled with the sort of, like, risk-reward of, like, or, like, I guess the sort of, like, resource management of how and when do I want to use these limited resources I have between the cards and the effort dice that you have to play with and everything to try to, you know, either get more advantages that will help you towards your goal or potentially maybe even work towards that goal in a very direct moment that you don't always know necessarily if what you're doing is going to, like, going to further your quest. I feel like there was times where it was like, is this the thing that I'm supposed to do? You know, like, I had a couple moments like that where it looked like if I just brought this thing to this one tile, then things would move along, and they didn't, you know, like, I had to do this one other or two other things before my story continued to move along.
Yeah.
And it wasn't always clear, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, there is kind of like a mysterious element to some of it, like I was saying, like, it's not always immediately obvious, like, what it is you're supposed to be doing.
Yeah,
or where you're supposed to go. Which, on the one hand, I kind of appreciate, but then on the other hand, can be incredibly frustrating.
It leads to some moments of discovery and, you know, some sort of like, oh, wow, okay, that's cool, you know, like, I didn't expect that. But it also leads to, I thought I was doing the right thing in order to further this quest along, and now I realize I am a whole turn or two behind my competitor because it's a competitive game.
Right, yeah. And I think, well, here's the thing. I think when we started playing, we were kind of, I mean, we knew that it was a competitive game, but I think we knew that, like, on an intellectual level, but then, like, we've played a lot of these kinds of games level.
Yeah.
We were still playing it like it was a cooperative game.
Like, you've got all the time in the world, right?
Right,
yeah. Like, there's no timer. Like, this isn't a race. This isn't, you know, like, I'm not competing against you. It felt like we were just playing parallel stories.
Mm-hmm.
And I was interested to see where yours went. Maybe you were interested to see where mine went. But only one of us got to finish.
Right, yeah. I mean, I remember there being points where we were, like, talking about what it is we were going to do. It was like,
yeah,
okay, I'm going to go take care of this guy over here, and you can go explore that thing. And
it was a bit difficult for me to play it in a way that I think was conducive to a competitive game, a game of this nature played competitively.
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think I probably would like it. I mean, I liked it fine, but I think I probably would have liked it better if in a multiplayer situation, if it were actually cooperative.
Yeah, I wish that there was a built-in variant for like you both have to complete your destinies within a certain time frame or something to that effect, right? Like, something like that would have been, I think, more fun for me because of how I want to play these types of games, how I enjoy playing these types of games. Maybe it's because it's how I'm used to playing these kinds of games.
Yeah.
So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe if I played Destinies competitively enough, I'd come to appreciate it. But it didn't feel like that came naturally, you know?
Right. Yeah. It really, I think you're absolutely right. It certainly didn't come naturally. Like, I, you know, like I said before, is like, again, it's one thing to know it kind of intellectually that this is, you know, we're competing against each other. But then on the other hand, it's like these kinds of games always feel like you should be cooperating.
It's true. And if we had just gotten to the end and you had gotten to your ending first and it was like, Jason is the winner, but, like, I still got to, you know, finish my thing up and get, like, Kyle's second place and here's what happened.
Yeah.
That might have felt a little better, but I feel like, didn't it just kind of, like, come to a full stop when you beat
the game? Yeah, because I won. And you didn't even, you didn't get to finish your story.
Right, so my person's just like, you know, like, I don't know, whatever my story was, still a werewolf or whatever, I don't know, you know, like, just hanging out, so close to the finish line, but not allowed to cross it.
Right. Yeah, exactly. That, I get that feeling is not great.
Yeah. So didn't love that about it.
Yeah.
But the rest of it is fine.
Yeah.
If you like QR codes.
Well, I think the QR code thing is an interesting concept. I like the idea of the items and stuff being more interactive with the app than, you know, without having everything explained to you up front, like, you know, like having everything that the card does listed on the card, like, there's no mystery to that. So it's kind of fun to have it scan into the program and then have something you didn't expect happen.
There's obfuscation that you don't have in a game that doesn't include this kind of technology.
Right, and I think that's really cool. There are downsides to it. One is that the scanning is not seamless. Like, it can sometimes be a little fiddly. And two, the QR code on the card, like, really messes with the art.
That's true. Yeah, it's kind of ugly.
It is kind of ugly to have this big, like, black and white box.
On everything.
On everything, yeah.
On your character card, on every, you know, item. It's unsightly. But
yeah.
I guess, you know, like, it functions in a way. It does. It serves a purpose that you can't really have without some level of technology there, right?
Right, yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And I really, you know, I kind of appreciate that in terms of, you know, game design, that they're trying to make essentially an adventure dungeon crawly type of game that has more mystery and discovery in it than other types of games where things are sort of not as obfuscated or not as shrouded, you know, where you know, you get an item and you know exactly what this item does, or like, you know, it's what are those fetch quests, like, go get this thing, and like, you get it, and that's sort of it, like, you know, I mean, that you got the thing and this is what it does. Like,
there are games out there that I think there's games out there that are able to obfuscate some of that and like have, you know, like a special thing happen when you use, you know, this chicken feather on this other thing, right? Because the chicken feather might not tell you exactly what it does, but when you try it, you know, like on a certain spot, the card that you pull out of a box or whatever for that particular spot may say, if you have the chicken feather, then this happens, right? There's ways to make it work, but there's not a way to have probably the amount of variety that you can pack into a game using a digital apparatus like this.
Plus, I mean, if you had something like that example you were using, and like, say you played this game multiple times, and
it would be the same every time.
It would be the same every time. And if you drew that card and you didn't happen to have the chicken feather, you know what happens when you do have the chicken feather. So next time you do it, there's no surprise there.
Yeah, I think, like, you know, a similar thing can still happen with this kind of a game where, like, you know that when you do the person that I was playing as in Destiny's, I know that if I go, you know, and follow the exact same quest line and I have the same items in hand, it's going to play out the same way. Like, I don't think that part is randomized or, you know, there's any variance with it or anything like that. But I do get the impression that because they're using these QR codes to, you know, attach certain items and certain people and certain locations to each other in, you know, like a much more like sort of crisscrossy spiderweb type way, it feels like a game where there is a greater possibility space with all of those things and those interactions than a game that is completely reliant on physical components.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's true, because we would have to exhaust all of the different, you know, possibilities, which would take forever, but it feels like that, at least with things being this obfuscated. So
and I, you know, like I said, I appreciate that. I like it in terms of, like, I generally like games that have sort of an exploration aspect to it, and I feel like, you know, the way that they did this kind of helps that aspect. Like, it feels much more like an exploratory thing.
I think if you're the kind of person that likes Mansions of Madness but did not like the kind of, like, the difficulty spikes that you get in Mansions of Madness, and maybe wants a little bit more, I don't know, it feels like there's, like, a little bit more mechanic to this game with the way that you know, use or don't use dice, you know, use or don't use items and all that.
Yeah.
It feels like a very similar game aside from those things. I kind of think that aside from the competitive nature of this game and the way that I don't like that, how that played out, this might be a slightly more enjoyable alternative to Mansions of Madness if you don't like the punishing nature of that game.
Yeah, I would say that's accurate. I mean, we only played that one scenario, so I don't know how difficult the game gets.
Oh,
but
yeah, that's true. Destiny, sure, yeah. But I mean, it certainly wasn't as difficult as the early 1 hour scenario you do in Mansions of Madness.
No,
so.
Yeah, for sure.
I think I played that thing 3 times before I beat it, so.
Yeah, no, I don't really know what. So when somebody is completing their Destiny, you basically enter that into the app, and it goes into this thing called finale mode, where the end of your story basically occurs, and then there's like a series of things that you have to do or challenges you have to overcome or whatever else in order for your destiny to be fulfilled. So the one that we did, when I finished it, it was relatively simple. you know, I it wasn't an incredible hurdle to overcome the finale challenge and to just and to win the game.
It's more like have three turns.
So yeah, it was sort of it was kind of like that. I don't actually remember what I had to do in those three turns, but it wasn't really, it didn't seem anything significant at the time. But I imagine that later scenario, like this was the introductory scenario. I'm guessing that later scenarios will have a larger sort of finale challenge to them.
Maybe.
Especially hard knowing enough, sure. What I know about the minis in the game. You know, so which we should talk about the components. So the game comes with a bunch of minis. They're, you know,
mini minis.
They're character minis, and then they're monster minis. The character minis are tiny, like, and even the NPC minis are tiny, tiny.
They're the same. Well, they're made by the same people as the Joan of Arc game we've played in the past.
Yep.
And they are the exact same scale, which is teeny tiny.
Yeah, they're very tiny. Although for their tiny size, they are rather well detailed.
Are they? Because we got confused about who some of those figures were, and we actually had them mixed up.
I think it's because they kind of look similar.
Yeah, but I mean, I think part of that is because it's difficult to get that much detail on a figure that small.
No, I think it's because they have similar details.
Okay, well, I think that there's only so much detail you can get on something that small.
Yeah, obviously. But I still, yeah. I mean, I think they're decent quality.
For their size, yeah.
For their size. The monster minis are much more, I mean, they're larger, first of all.
They're larger, yeah.
And they're much more detailed. And then what I'm gathering is the big boss of the whole game is absolutely massive. And looks wicked cool, by the way.
Your Boston is coming out.
Wicked cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry. So there's, you know, so I'm guessing anyway that the finale challenge, once it gets to like that level, will probably be much more of a actual hurdle to overcome.
It'll be interesting to see, right?
Yeah. I'm interested in playing more of this game, like, solo.
You should. I think that is the perfect way to play Destinies, in my opinion.
Yeah.
As somebody that is very comfortable playing things solo and didn't think that this was all that compelling to play competitively,
yeah,
I think that this game should be played solo if you're going to play it at all, or you come up with some, I don't know, very clever way to make this a cooperative game. I feel like that would really take something from the developer, though, because I feel like they'd have to do something to the app so that both people can finish their story.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, that's probably the biggest, you know, downside for the.
I think so. I mean,
one person.
You know, unless you just really want a competitive game that is an adventure in narrative form or whatever, you know, the way that if you like the sound of the mechanics and you like the sound of the way that it's telling your own little personal story, and you think that it's okay to not complete the story if you're not the one that wins, but you enjoy the nature of competitiveness more than, you know, it bothers you not to finish a story potentially, then, you know, this might be for you. But yeah. I feel like that's probably the minority of people out there. You know, like if you're playing this game to see where your character goes and where your character story goes, you probably want to finish it, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know that it matters who finishes it first.
Right. I should mention that there are two different types of solo modes for this game. The first one is essentially, like, you want to play the game for the story, so there's no, there's no, like, time pressure or anything like that. The second mode is, like, the challenge mode, and that one actually does have a time pressure.
There's a fail.
There is a fail condition. So if you want to just play it for the story, you certainly can. And those who want more of a challenge can play the challenge mode.
I think that would be kind of cool. And I'm interested to see or hear what you think as you continue to do that, Jason, about this game, playing it in the, either way, the solo, either solo mode. But yeah, I don't think that I would want to make a point to come back to this week after week competitively if it were me.
Yeah.
But it does look like an interesting, compelling game to play, you know, if you get to actually play through your story every time you sit down with it.
Yeah. Now that I have my fancy gaming table, I'm looking towards towards playing more of this, you know, by myself and seeing where
it
goes.
Those help. We've had Madara set up on ours for months now, and
you just put the thing over top of it.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the game would be completely unplayable were it not for that, I think. But you know, it would be a much bigger pain to do because you've got to, it's an arduous teardown and setup. So
right, yeah.
But yeah, those gaming tables help a lot. For sure, for games like this, these campaign games, yeah.
Woohoo!
Okay, anything else about Destinies?
I don't think so.
No, I think we've said all we need to say.
I do, too.
worth a look if you're interested in that sort of a thing. Just, you know, maybe think twice about playing it competitively with someone else.
Yeah, big takeaway. Competitive, not so hot.
It's not a super expensive game either. I think it's like $40 on the discounter websites.
Yeah.
It's probably like 50 or 60 or something.
There are a couple of expansions for it too. So if you exhaust the base game storyline.
Yeah, so I mean, like, this is out of a lot of the games we've talked about, or we do talk about, this is clearly, I feel like it's a pretty good value for what you get for the price that it is. You know, we don't say that a lot anymore, but I feel like this is one of those.
So yeah, that's good.
Yeah. Okay. Well, if people would like to get a hold of us and tell us what they think our destiny should be, how would they do so, Jason?
All right. Well, for all those that want to tell me I'm going to end up in a ditch covered in petrol on fire, you can, and cheers to anybody that gets that reference, you can email us. It's podcast@limitedplaytime.com. You can go to the website, limitedplaytime.com. You can tweet us at limitedplaytime or go to Instagram at limitedplaytimepodcast.
I promised several episodes ago, I think, that I would check on my Instagram address. It is KJ Bolin. So if you want to follow me there, you can. I usually post once or twice a week, at least, some board game stuff. I have been recently. I took a long hiatus from that for a while, but I'm back, baby. Back on the gram. So check me out there, KJ Bolin.
Influencer.
That's right, yeah. I don't know the reference you're talking about, but when you said in a ditch, dead in a ditch, I thought about that Stephen King short story where, like, the teacher loses his wife or something to some mobster, and he digs a big ditch.
Oh, yeah.
On the guy's driving route, and then the limo or the car or whatever falls in the ditch, and then he buries him alive.
Yeah. I forget which story that is, but I remember.
It was from Nightmares and Dreamscapes, I think. It's a short story.
Yeah.
But I don't remember the name of it. Yeah, but that was the first thing I thought of.
No, it was a reference to an Eddie Izzard comedy special.
Oh, I don't remember that. But I've seen a lot of Eddie Izzards, so I've probably seen it. But mostly all I remember is the stuff everybody remembers, you know, like Cake or Death and, you know.
Oh, yeah. Cake or Death.
It was a candy bar one, too, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Twix, please. We're murderers or something. Anyway, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll see you in probably 2 or 3 weeks.
We've been
more like every three.
That'll be just prior to Gen Con.
Yeah, we should get one more, probably one more in before Gen Con, and then we'll have 3 or 4 episodes all in a row.
Yeah, I bet you're excited.
4 days in a row. I don't know, some people probably get excited for that, so
sure,
it's nice to hear what's going on there, and I don't know, probably to experience first or second hand how other people are enjoying something like that. So,
right on.
All right, thanks for listening, everybody.
Later.
See you then. Bye.